This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Star Diary, the podcast from the makers of BBC Sky at Night magazine. You can subscribe to the print edition of the magazine by visiting skyatnightmagazine.com or to our digital edition by visiting iTunes or Google Play.
Greetings, listeners, and welcome to Star Diary, a weekly guide to the best things to see in the Northern Hemisphere's night sky. As we're based here in the UK, all times are in GMT. In this episode, we'll be covering the coming week from the 5th to the 11th of December. I'm Ezzie Pearson, the magazine's features editor, and I'm joined on the podcast today by reviews editor Paul Money. Now, Paul, last week you did tease that this week might be quite a good week for stargazing. So, what have we got coming up?
Well, I mean, you know what they say? They usually say these things come in threes. Well, this time it's twos, but... The moon occults two planets this week. All in one week. Two planets. I mean, that is amazing. So, but it'll get even more amazing as we get towards the end of the week. But we start off with an interesting one, which I'm determined to see. I mean, you know, we'll battle the clouds, won't we? that's the enemy of an astronomer, the clouds.
Absolutely.
It's the planet Uranus. Now, on December the 5th, so we start off the kicking off the week on December the 5th. We have an occultation of Uranus by the moon and you get to see the whole thing. Now it does occur in evening twilight, but Uranus is a bright planet. We're not worried about the moons in this particular case because they are quite faint, but Uranus is bright enough to be seen in binoculars. But I would recommend using a telescope. And because it's a disc, it does take quite a few seconds to actually disappear. So it's not like a star. A star will vanish instantly, whereas something like Uranus or any other planet will always take it'll be a gradual change, usually a few seconds.
We should first say an occultation is when a planet or a star appears to disappear behind another celestial object. So in this case, it's going to be the planet Uranus is going to be passing behind the bright moon, which is always an exciting thing to see.
And especially as the actual disappearance is on the dark limb. So you have to really pay attention because what will happen is you can't see the actual limb on that side because it's dark, isn't it? It's experiencing nighttime. So what you need to keep your eye, if you've got a telescope that tracks, you need to keep your eye on Uranus and suddenly you'll start to see there's a bit taken out and then a little bit more and it will literally disappear behind this dark limb. So we're looking about, I would suggest, from 4:30 p.m. onwards. Occultation is about 4:49, 4:50 in the evening. And it'll disappear, as I say, at the dark limb. The reappearance on the bright limb is around 5:17 onwards. Now, you've got to bear in mind, times will vary depending where you are in the UK. So that does change the time. We always say start at least 10, 15 minutes before and keep an eye on the area where you expect the disappearance to take place and the reappearance as well. Because, you know, you don't want to miss the reappearance. Although I say it'll be gradual, but
no,
I always like to try to get the very beginning of it when it's a planet. Cause I say it's several seconds. So but it's very difficult on the bright limb because the bright limb will be matching and brighter than the actual planet itself. So, you'll only suddenly notice it, I think, when it's about halfway out.
One of the things I've never been sure of is if it's something like this, where there's an occultation, is it better to sort of pre-look at the place on the moon where you think it's going to disappear? Or is it better to try and follow the planet or just get into the general area?
Well, it depends on whether you've got go-to. If you've got go-to, lock it on the planet and then just allow the moon to pass over the view. And so you know, hopefully the centre of the view will be where Uranus is. So it'll give you an idea and it'll add to the anticipation and the excitement sort of thing, hoping that the actual telescope is tracking properly. And in theory, if you're homed in on Uranus, then as the moon glides by, Uranus should reappear and you know exactly where Uranus is. But you're right. If you're using a manual system, I always think it's better. I think it should make good practice to observe the limb of the moon, say around about half an hour before all these events take place, both limbs, the dark limb and the bright limb, and get familiar with where they expect to come out and identify the craters so you have a good idea where on the limb it will actually reappear and where on the dark limb it should actually disappear. So I think that makes good practice myself. But I say, if you've got a go-to system, it's sort of, you're almost the lazy astronomer. I remember when go-tos came out, it was like, oh, that's lazy astronomy. You should do it practically and find the stars yourself. But, you know, I'm a complete convert now to go-to mounts. So I have to say, I'll probably be cheating and putting it on go-to and just watching the centre of the view.
Yeah, there's definitely sometimes when it's the kind of tracking it down and trying to find it yourself, that's half the fun.
Yeah.
And there's definitely times when having a system that does everything for you is much better.
And you can do a lot more with one of those systems sort of thing. You know, you can get through a lot more objects. But I agree. I do like trying to find these objects myself sometimes, just for the sheer fun of it, and to remind me of the good old days. Oh, gosh, I'm beginning to sound old now. Now, the thing about the occultation of Uranus is that it's really a practice run for the big event later in the week. But we'll come to that in a few moments. Now, December the 6th and 7th, we just take our eyes off these occultations for a moment because you can watch the moon pass through the constellation of Taurus. It's heading towards full, which will occur on the 8th, and we'll come to that in a moment. But on the 6th, it lies below the Pleiades. Then on the 7th, to the upper right of Mars. This is in the evening. So we're looking around about 7 o'clock in the actual evening itself. So it gives you a guide sort of thing. But the only problem is with, as you've got such a full bright moon, it will drown out the vast majority of the Pleiades. Now, the Pleiades are one of those things that I always say to people, see how many you can count. Don't do it when it's full moon. You really want a dark sky to see the individual faint stars of the Pleiades.
I suppose that could actually be quite an interesting exercise, you know, to just see what effect the full moon has. You know,
yes.
Try and count it when there's no moon next to it, and then try and count it on the full moon and see the difference. And then you can really sort of learn to appreciate how much the full moon does or doesn't affect what you're seeing.
Which, in a way, sort of thing, also illustrates the effect of light pollution, doesn't it? Because basically the full moon is, I mean, us deep sky observers sort of thing, you know, the moon's up, it's light pollution, but we can't do anything about that. But we can do something about artificial light pollution. That's the key. But yeah, we can't do anything about the moon sort of thing. I mean, you know, we're not sort of like the, what was that film sort of thing? The one before the Minions. And all that lot of sort of thing, he grew in.
Oh, Despicable Me.
Despicable Me, when he stole the moon.
He steals the moon.
I mean, it was a good, I love the film sort of thing, but the science, you know, if you got rid of them like that, it'd be terrible sort of thing. And the tides would all be changing. Oh, gosh, there all sorts of disasters would happen on the Earth.
I know you deep sky astronomers might not particularly like the moon, but it does a lot for us. So can we keep it around, please?
Exactly.
Thank you.
Well, that is a good idea for a project sort of thing. Compare the two, deep sky, and especially if you've got a site without any light pollution, count the Pleiades, and then count how many when the moon's nearby, especially if it's close to full, and just see how much it diminishes and you lose the fainter stars sort of thing. So there we are.
If anybody does do that, please do let us know. You can find our details over on www.skyatnightmagazine.com. So let us know what the difference is if you do manage to see that.
Now, the excitement. Wow. I mentioned that the moon is to the right of Mars on the evening of the 7th. But this is where it gets exciting, because full moon occurs on the 8th, in the early hours in actual fact. The key is, though, Mars reaches opposition. It is opposite the sun in the sky. That's actually the same definition, really, as the moon at full. The full moon is opposite the sun in the sky. It's just that we have a different term for it. We call it full moon. But technically, the moon is at opposition. To every month, the moon has got to have at least one opposition as such. So it's opposite the sun in the sky. So that's when it's full. And the fact that Mars is at opposition, you know, within an hour of the moon being at opposition, that leads to one really important effect. And the fact is, Mars gets occulted by the moon. I mean, this is so rare. I can't even think of the time that it might happen in the future. We may be looking at hundreds. We may even be looking at thousands of years in the future before something like this actually happens, at the point of opposition for both the moon and Mars. That's why I think this one is so exciting. And that, you know, it's one of those that, you know, you have it. We have a lot of landmark events to look forward to, and betraying my age, I can always remember looking forward to the 1999 solar eclipse. Oh my gosh, it's 22 years ago, 23 in fact.
Oh my goodness.
I mean,
it
gosh,
is
22 years, you know. But I can remember as a boy looking forward to that and wondering where I'll be. Ended up in Devon and it was cloudy. Classic, isn't it? So, you know, but this is one of those other events. We have various events that we look forward to. And Mars opposition on December the 8th, 2022, at the same time as it gets occulted by the moon, is one of those rare events. You've got to try and see it. You know, no excuse, right? As we tell everybody, no excuse. Every single listener, you are ordered to listen, to watch this event. Not that we can order you to do these things, but, you know, this is one of those, it is an unmissable event. You know, it's so rare that it's worth having a go at. So, as the moon occults Mars, it takes about an hour. So it's nice and I mean, how easy is this? Except one thing. It's in the morning sky. I know. Oh, come on. You've got to set an alarm, haven't you, Izzy? You've got to set an alarm.
I think this is one where it is worth getting up at silly o'clock in the morning and trying to observe this one.
I'd definitely be up at around about half past three, no later than four. I mean, the occultation is about 4:57. Remember, the timings do vary slightly, and it takes around about 34, 35, 36 seconds, depending on your location, for Mars to disappear. So it gives you an idea of how big Mars is. I mean, with Uranus, it was just a few seconds. But Mars, we're talking about, you know, half a minute effectively, really, aren't we? And so, you know, it will take a while. Now, it'll be fascinating if you can see any albedo features at the time to watch them being occulted as well. I've never seen this. I've seen occultations of Saturn and Jupiter, but I've not seen an occultation of Mars. So I'm fascinated by this. So I can't wait for it. So you do need to have an early night. Get plenty of time to get ready. So, you know, don't leave it until sort of like 10 minutes before and then think, oh, look, the sky's clear, I'll go out. Get out, get ready, whether you're visually observing it or whether you're photographing it, sort of thing. And as you know, Ezzy, we always encourage people to write in if you see this, because this is such an unusual event.
Absolutely.
So this appearance occurs or the begins around 4:57 a.m., and Mars is now 17.2 arc seconds across, so it takes about 34 to 35 seconds to disappear. Reappearance is about an hour later. I mean, that's pretty convenient, I have to say. I mean, that makes the timing a lot easier. And again, Much like we said for Uranus, if you're using a go-to telescope, get it locked on Mars and then just allow the moon to drift through the view. I mean, that's fascinating enough, knowing that in theory you're looking at position for Mars and you can see then the real motion of the moon as the moon drifts through your field of view, and then Mars will start to become uncovered. So about an hour after the occultation takes place. Now, the reappearance is actually at the bright limb. But because we're full moon, both events take a place at the bright limb. There is no dark limb with it being full moon. So that'll be an interesting contrast. But Mars is a bright planet. We're not talking about a star that can be overwhelmed by the actual light of the moon. Normally, sort of, we wouldn't recommend occultations when it's full moon, in actual fact, because it makes it harder to see that disappearance. But we're dealing with a planet, aren't we? So there we are, sort of thing. Keep an eye out for this. It shows you the regularity of the clockwork of the solar system, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And you did mention there that Mars is quite a bright planet. It's, in fact, a naked eye planet. Is this something that you would be able to see with the naked eye as well, though obviously not in as much detail?
You'll be able to notice the moon getting closer and closer. And the question will be, if you watch it with the naked eye, if you've got nothing else, then fair enough, watch it with the naked eye, and you'll see the moon creeping closer and closer to Mars. And then judging the point when it disappears, it'll be interesting, because Mars should fade, sort of thing, rather than disappear as a star would do. So that'll be the interesting thing. And then if you keep an eye on around about the right time, just wait for this star to emerge from the other side. So you should be able to see something. Obviously, we'd always recommend binoculars or a telescope for an event like this. But if you've got nothing like that, still look. Have a look. It'd be amazing to watch this star, this red star, which we know is a planet, actually disappear behind the moon and reappear.
Yeah, that is always the possibility. You can always watch it with your eyes. We'll also have a live stream that will be having a nice detailed view as well. That'll be on our website, skynightmagazine.com. So do be sure to check there. We also have a lot of guides in the December issue, because funnily enough, this kind of once in a lifetime event was something that we thought you guys might like to know about. So we have lots of detailed guides about, you know, capturing it on camera, where to look, and how to make sure that you make the most out of this event and don't miss a thing.
And finally, let's get back to something boring. Oh dear, back to normal now. Finally, for the week, the ends with the waning gibbous moon forming a triangle with Castor and Pollux in Gemini on the late evening of the 10th. So we're back to normal after this sort of thing. This is the week for really observing, but you know, we're back to normal now, and it's back to normal events with the moon and the stars themselves. But I still find them fascinating, and hopefully if it's clear, you'll be able to see them as well.
Thank you very much, Paul. That sounds like it's going to be an absolutely incredible week in terms of stargazing. On the 5th of December, you've got the occultation of Uranus as the planet appears to disappear behind the moon. Then we have 2 days where the Pleiades will have the moon coming by on the 6th and Mars on the 7th. And then, of course, the show-stopping event on the 8th of December is the Mars occultation. That's the one that you really want to set in your diaries and get up in time for to go and see. Then finally, on the 10th, we have Castor and Pollux forming a triangle with the moon. If you do manage to capture any of those incredible events that we talked about, please do let us know. You can always reach us at contactus@skyatnightmagazine.com. We always like to hear from our listeners. If you want to find out even more spectacular sights that will be gracing the night sky throughout the month, be sure to pick up a copy of BBC Sky at Night magazine, where we have a 16-page pull-out sky guide with a full overview of everything worth looking up for. Whether you like to look at the moon, the planets, or the deep sky, whether you use binoculars, telescopes, or neither, our sky guide has got you covered, with the detailed star charts to help you track your way across the night sky. From all of us here at BBC Sky at Night magazine, goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Star Diary podcast from the makers of BBC Sky at Night magazine. For more of our podcasts, visit our website at skyatnightmagazine.com or head to Acast, iTunes, or Spotify.